Noah Kenny is founder of Digital 520, a consultancy specializing in AI governance and cybersecurity. He's president and chief scientist of Disruptive AI Lab, president of the Ethical Tech Forum, and author of Governing Intelligence. He co-developed the country's first AI privacy engineering course at Georgia Tech and has advised on over 40 enterprise AI initiatives. So Noah, take me all the way back to your college days. What were your dreams and goals and aspirations then?
Sure. So I'd always been an entrepreneur. When I started my undergrad, I'd been running an IT and marketing firm. So I was building some in AI. I was doing general web development, digital marketing, and I was doing most of it for SEC compliant industries. So specifically in multifamily and commercial real estate, companies that were looking to raise money to purchase, say, an apartment building, and I would help handle their IT and marketing to do that. And my very first class as an undergrad, I ended up taking an elective that was privacy, policy, technology, and law. And I started to explore more of the ethical sides of technology and how it interacts with policy, with how you build the technical controls and how you handle the compliance. And so very quickly, I started to shift a little bit of what I was doing in technology more towards governance. I was an econ major as an undergrad. And so I studied really applied mathematics is more so what the degree was. And I did a lot of data analysis on new and emerging technologies and technology regulation. So even as an econ major, I was really kind of working on governance and policy. And it spiraled from there.
Very interesting. So I'm actually curious to learn why you got drawn towards this specific industry, and it's moving so fast. How do you impose regulations and ethical standards on something that's artificial yet perhaps developing some layer of consciousness?
Yeah, it's challenging, right? So my work spans academia, industry, and government, because it really takes all three groups working together to get this right. There are components of this that the government can't regulate, and we have to rely on companies being responsible when they're building AI models. There are components of this that academia has to teach, right? Both from an innovative concept perspective and then also from a rote memorization perspective. And then from the government perspective, there's a question of how do we write regulation that is timeless, right? Something that can actually withstand this big test of time, and also something that is both legally robust, right? It has to hold up in court, but something that companies can easily implement, right? So they have to know how to implement it from a technical perspective. But if you get too prescriptive in that way, then it becomes impossible for the regulation to actually be timeless. So you kind of have these competing odds here.
Can I push back on that perspective? I'm genuinely curious,
please.
Because I think that narrative of how do we write something that's so robust that can stand the test of time, I think that should perhaps be challenged, because that is the way of thinking in terms of how regulation has been drawn from the beginning of time. And perhaps we've reached a place where we have no predictive power. We've kind of blown Moore's Law out of the water. We're going to be moving towards a place of you have progress, assuming that LLMs are leading towards AGI. We're moving towards a world of quantum computing, towards a world where data is just transmitted really efficiently with blockchain. You're going to see this absolute explosion of growth where that ability to predict is going to become fictionalized. So to actually write regulations that will account for the future sounds like a very difficult, if not impossible, task. And perhaps the lens should be adjusted where the intrinsically built within the laws are the ability for them to be nimble and adjust to the environment, rather than make something once that's going to be for it and hope it's going to be forever relevant.
Yeah, so I agree. So broadly, when I talk about making it timeless, really what I mean is that you need to take a principles-based approach to regulation and not a prescriptive approach to it. So instead of regulating, say, how much power do we want this technology to have? How much data should it be able to take in? Which specific data fields do we want to restrict? You go more on a principle-based level. So if you look at Europe, right, in the European Union, and we can take GDPR on the privacy side, the most recognized data privacy law, and now over 140 jurisdictions have some GDPR-inspired comprehensive privacy law. And when you look at GDPR, it's comprised of these fundamental principles, things like data minimization or purpose limitation, which is effectively saying there is a purpose for which data is collected. You can't just erroneously collect data. That data has to be minimized. The amount of data that you collect should be the minimum amount of data necessary to perform the function that you're trying to perform. So there are countries, and particularly in Europe, that have taken more of a principles-based approach. And the idea to that regulation on the privacy side is this allows companies to have some leeway, but that's offset by the fact that companies have reporting requirements and they ultimately have enforcement action that is pretty significant penalties in the European Union. And so that counteracts companies going, well, we're just not going to do anything, right? They actually have to take it seriously. And so what you don't want to do is write a law that restricts these technologies in such a way that you have to go and amend the laws later on. Instead, what you'd rather do is write the laws in taking a principles-based approach, setting it with proper enforcement, and that allows you to have timeless regulation.
Is the term regulations can't keep up with AI real, or is it simply an excuse for companies to fend off the imposition of governance?
I used to think that it was largely an excuse from companies until talking to a lot of people in government who really don't know how to regulate the technology and they're afraid of getting it wrong. And they're watching a really evolving landscape and it's hard to get that right. So I mentioned GDPR, which is a data privacy law. That law comes out and several years after that, AI kind of becomes mainstream. And so now the principles of data minimization, for example, or purpose limitation, become really ambiguous. Because if you have an AI model that's collecting data and it's not sure how it's going to use it yet, that doesn't necessarily fit into the principle of purpose limitation or data minimization under GDPR. So now Europe's had to come out with the EU AI Act. And that AI Act was supposed to go into effect in August. And now they're worried it's too restrictive. So they're proposing changes to it. In fact, today they spent 12 hours debating it back and forth and reached no resolution on the matter. There is an element of it that goes, we don't want to get it wrong. It's challenging to figure out. There's no guidebook or playbook here, and we're kind of starting from the ground up. You've got to keep in mind that the regulators have many policy issues on the table, not just AI, and every company's advocating for something different. So there's not even consistency among, say, OpenAI and Anthropic. They disagree fundamentally on what the approach should to regulation and liability should be. So that makes it difficult too, because there's not even industry consensus. Mm. And without industry consensus, how do you get government consensus? And the last thing I'll say is it's not a platform issue, right? There's not been candidates who have come out and made their platform on AI governance or regulation. So it's a little bit removed from the public sector currently still.
It's really hard for us to agree on something when we don't know what it is we're building. It's all really interesting. And if I were to say, you know, we're going to have it your way, how do you envision this playing out in the best case scenario from like a utopian perspective? And what philosophy do you think will help us get there?
So a couple of points I'll make there. One is regulation's really only as good as its enforcement. In the United States, we really lack an enforcement body for this form of regulation. Enforcement for data privacy currently comes from the FTC, and they have very limited capacity. So that's why you don't see huge numbers of, say, data privacy cases in the court systems. You're seeing a little bit more now brought by the states against companies, right? Because we now have 21 states that have individual data privacy laws. So we have very fragmented system today. Privacy and AI governance are very closely related because privacy is one of the fundamental harms of poorly governed AI. And we're the only democracy, the only developed country in the world today that lacks comprehensive data privacy. And there's been three attempts to pass it at the federal level. It's never happened. So you now have a fragmented landscape, 21 state laws, bunch of sector-specific regulations. We need that not to happen in AI. My kind of thoughts of how you do that practically. One is you need a baseline, right? You need some form of universal standards. Even just defining at a federal level the terms AI, algorithm, et cetera, bias, discrimination, that shared language doesn't currently exist. And so even having that is the basis to enforcement later on. How can you go to court and argue a legal claim on the basis of language that's not yet defined? So we need some of those definitions produced at the federal level, some baseline regulations, an enforcement body to actually be able to go and regulate this. And then I think companies have a responsibility to figure out how to do this well. And if they don't, then there's, of course, litigation that comes against them for it. And so there is kind of this capitalist reason to approach that in a meaningful way.
I want to talk about what we're actually building. So there's two real schools of thought here brawling in real time of whether progression in the domain of LLMs is going to lead to AGI. Perhaps there's a shock factor where we came from nothing to some sort of LLM, and the assumption that we're going to keep up that delta, that rate of change, could be an erroneous one. It's also possible that LLMs will get significantly better, but we're just building, let's just say as an analogy here, a better calculator. It doesn't mean that that calculator is going to become conscious or be able to have a general sense of intelligence. How would that outcome influence how you view philosophically how to regulate these things? So let's just say we're moving towards actual artificial general intelligence, and somehow that implies this emergent property of consciousness, or whether you're just going to see Anthropic and ChatGPT just perform much faster, and it's just going to be able to do the stuff it does now incrementally better.
Sure. So a couple of things come into play with some form of what we could broadly refer to as AGI. The first one is, what rights does the technology have? So that's a question that we're starting to see play out. An AI attempted to file a patent with no human on it. So we have all these systems that are built at the federal, at the state level, that are designed for humans, that now AIs are able to circumvent and navigate themselves. So are we able to give, say, intellectual property rights to an AI, copyrights, things like that? That's something that has not yet been answered from a legal perspective in a comprehensive way, though there have been a number of cases that have kind of taken a stab at it. Second thing is, if we move beyond rights, we have to move to liability. So if you have a self-driving vehicle, for example, and it now has some form of consciousness in it, right? So it's actually able to think in a human-like, ethical, moral way, and not just an algorithmic way, then how do you penalize if something goes wrong? How do you ensure that its motives align with human interest? And there's this further question of, which human interest do they align with? You might have different humans who have different human interests. And this creates a possibility for harm. So an example that I give is, we could create an AI, say it has consciousness, say it is some form of AGI, and we give it the world's problems. And so one of the problems we give it is, solve global warming. And we all say, this is a great goal. We all agree, bipartisan issue. We're all happy to solve global warming. And the AI starts to reason and go, well, global warming is caused by carbon emissions. And carbon emissions are produced by cars. Humans drive cars. And yeah, you can see where this plays out from there.
Isn't that the famous paperclip maximizer analogy?
And people go, well, could that actually ever happen? AI has access to a lot of things, right? And we're giving it access to more and more systems that are integrated in the real world. So to your point of, effectively, what's the plateau of a calculator, right? How much can it improve? Well, the answer to that is actually pretty hard to determine, because we now see effectively a calculator in a spreadsheet. We see that the decisions of who gets a loan, who can buy a house, how much of a car can you afford? Those are all decisions that are made by what's effectively an advanced calculator. If you think about it, if we didn't have calculators or advanced calculations, we probably would have structured lending a lot different, right? We probably would be using more simple interest versus waterfall calculators. So there's a lot of different ways that we can approach that and go, what is the effect of an advanced calculator, even without intelligence, been on our society? And then you can imagine where AGI comes in, as it goes, now I'm actually going to make that decision. I'm going to make the lending decision. And I'm going to make it in a way that a human, including my developer, might not understand. And that lack of explainability opens up a whole other window, both, like I said, into questions of rights, questions of liability, accountability, ownership. And those are cases that could clog the court systems for many years.
And at some point, we won't be navigating this AI landscape. We'll be inhibiting it. It'll almost be akin to, like, monkeys getting together and building an AI. And they first ask the AI, how can I make more bananas? And then the AI goes, well, we can make nuclear power plants and we can do all this stuff. And it's like, okay, will this make me more bananas? At some point, it's just like we're imposing our limited philosophical view of the world on it, when it's probably capable of computing way beyond this landmark of human intelligence. And I guess the segue here is, how do you see all this playing out? To your best guess, if you were to go 5 years into the future, where do you see regulations falling into place? And how do you see these AI use cases taking effect?
Yeah, so I think Europe's pretty far ahead of the United States on the regulatory side. And like I said, GDPR has heavily influenced the entire world on the privacy side. So I think we'll see something similar on the AI side. My view in my textbook, which is it's free, it's designed for industry, for academia, and for government. And it's basically a five-layer framework to approaching governance. And it's kind of where I'm seeing the convergence of the field. So I'll super briefly walk through those five layers.
Yeah.
It's a foundation. So it's a cascading dependency type framework. And I'll explain that in a second. But the first layer is data governance. So if you think of it as the bottom, the foundation is data governance. Layer two is model governance, the actual AI itself. Layer three is system integration governance. These are the three pre-deployment layers of governance. Post-deployment, you have layer four, which is control and monitoring, and layer five, which is auditing. And a lot of where we see regulation coming in is at the audit level. So the AI produced a harmful output, and we found out in an audit, and therefore, we go back to the data and the engineering team and we say, fix it. Mm. The issue there is that we've already seen the harm implemented, right? We've already seen the effects of the harm. So what I propose is we have to start at the bottom. We have to start with data. So if you build an AI model and you use biased data, say that's the issue in layer one. By the time you get to layer two, now you're going to have some form of, say, corrupted endpoint in your model. Then you take this model and you go and you integrate it in layer three with other systems. So you go, we're going to connect this to our Google Drive and to this system and that system. Now you have impacts more broadly across systems. The scary part is when you get to layer four. That's the control and monitoring layer, because you won't see the issue. If you train a model on biased data, then what it does is in layer four, it shows you we did exactly what we were supposed to do, because the model was effectively developed with a skewed view of the world, right? It thinks that something is off, it's distorted. And so that creates a problem in layer four where the model says we did everything right, and you go and you launch it to production, and 6 months later you go, it seems like it's being discriminatory. It seems like it's causing this privacy harm. And that's when you figure it out in an audit. So my approach to this and my suggestion to regulators is we have to start at the data governance level. We have to set standards for how you actually measure bias and discrimination, all these things. And then we have to make the control and monitoring layer continuous. Right? It has to be a continuous part of the process and not an annual audit. And so the premise here is this is cascading dependency, and an issue in layer N can't be remediated in layer N plus one. So if you mess up at the data level, you'll never get it right by the audit level. So to me, if you ask where I think regulation is hopefully going to head, it's to look at the fundamentals of the model at the data level, then the model, then the system integration. And so you may have a model that doesn't have harm until you integrate it with another system. And it may only have harm in a specific industry, say healthcare or finance. So instead of applying these restrictions or regulations across the board, I think we have to set some minimum standards and then some industry-specific standards about how you integrate it within a specific sector. And if you take that approach, I think you do remediate a lot of the issues. And the last thing I'll note is I think the government, and there's also some third-party organizations, right? You could look at the United Nations, NATO, some economic organizations that are working to create global definitions for AI, and also to share resource of here's how we are recommending continuous monitoring. Here's how we recommend you approach auditing. And those shared resources, though they're not required from a regulatory perspective, companies that are looking to ensure compliance to avoid litigation are very likely to utilize the resources provided to them. So if you provide good quality resources and share knowledge across the industry, companies will really utilize that. That's what I hope we see for the next 5 years or so.
So you've got quite a few titles to your name: founder, president, chief scientist, author, consultant. I guess your curiosity kind of pulls you in every direction. How do you navigate life this way?
Yeah. So Digital 520 is my consulting firm, and it's, you know, where I spend the majority of my time as the founder and principal consultant. And I do a lot of work with enterprises and high risk and regulated industries. So think healthcare, finance, education, industries where the risks are very high. Working on the risk and danger side of AI enough, I also really wanted to explore what happens when we do AI well. How can we use AI in a way that really benefits society. And to me, one of the highest impact ways was in medicine. Years and years ago, my sister and I were both misdiagnosed as not having pneumonia. We did, in fact, have pneumonia. My sister got very sick, and I ended up doing some research and finding out that pneumonia was one of the leading causes of death for children under the age of 5 internationally. Even in the United States, a general practitioner only diagnoses it correctly 50% of the time. So effectively a coin toss. And even top radiologists are only accurate 86% of the time. In third world countries, the issue is much worse because they don't have access to doctors to diagnose it quickly enough. And so I started this project to look at how could we diagnose pneumonia from a smartphone? How can we take a picture of a chest x-ray and diagnose pneumonia instantly from anywhere around the world? And that project really required a lot of work in data privacy and governance, because under HIPAA privacy laws and other privacy laws for healthcare internationally, doctors were concerned to send data to the cloud. So I wanted to build an AI model that worked entirely on device to do this. And the end result is the model's about 97, 98% accurate. And it diagnoses pneumonia in less than a second. And we started to see the effects of that, really meaningful effects, possibly life-saving type work for these preliminary diagnoses in other countries. So from there, I founded the Disruptive AI Lab. And the entire goal of the Disruptive AI Lab is to produce research and development as to how to use AI for good. Digital 520 works on how do we handle compliance? How do we build good technical systems? How do we handle privacy, security, and governance? And Digital 520 is looking largely at it from the perspective of a company. But the Disruptive AI Lab is looking at how we build innovative technology that benefits society. And to counteract the effects of any of these organizations becoming capitalistic in nature, I founded the Ethical AI Forum, which has now been renamed the Ethical Tech Forum because we've expanded to machine learning and deep learning and other technologies. And that's a non-for-profit think tank. And the non-for-profit think tank combines all these people from all different industries and says, how would you like to use AI and what are your concerns? What can go wrong? It pairs them up with computer scientists and AI engineers to write the frameworks for their industries. And after doing that for several years and also going back to creating the AI privacy engineering course at Georgia Tech, what was interesting is when I was tasked with doing that, it was the first course of its kind in the country and there was no textbook for it. I couldn't find a textbook anywhere that covered these topics. And so I started writing one, lecture notes and materials down. And that class was really well received. And so over the next couple of years, as I'm consulting, I'm realizing everybody needs a textbook. Everybody needs a field guide and a framework to approach this, whether they're in academia or industry or government, they're all asking the same questions and they're not as distinctive groups as everybody thinks that they might be. So I produced the textbook as a free resource to effectively help guide those conversations. And that's kind of where the intersection of all these comes in, is all of them are focused on the same mission, which is how do we use AI for good and prevent the harmful uses of it? Whether economic, privacy, security, et cetera, we want to make sure that we are using it in meaningful ways and healthcare and regulated industries and across the board, but that we're doing so in a really sustainable and responsible way. And so my organizations act as checks and balances against each other to do that, hopefully effectively.
Awesome. So Noah, how could people get in touch with you?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn, so you can find me there. My email address is info@noahkenny.com. So info@noahkenney.com. And then also my website, noahkenney.com. It has a few different ways to contact me on there as well.
Wonderful. Yeah, Noah, it's been a pleasure chatting and keep up doing so much. And looks like you're in an industry that's going to be much needed in the coming year. So
yeah,
I look forward
so.
To keeping tabs on all the great work you're doing.
Thanks for having me, Michael. I appreciate it.